Turin. And a couple of photos are taken by Tor Lighthouse. She never talks to strangers, and Horizon and Back. But I noticed in between writing the odd film script that you've got something, another poetry collection there, which I couldn't, because it was in the language. I don't
Serbian.
It's a Serbian. I was trying to see what it was, but I couldn't understand. Anyway, it's a Serbian. I'm sure to tell us all about it. A big hand, please, for Heather Taylor. Thank you.
Okay. Right.
Yay!
Hello everyone. it's quite strange. It's lovely, wonderful. I was just in Serbia in November launching a new book called Sick Day Afternoons. But if you look at the cover, it doesn't say that. It says something in Serbian. Popodnevnja Borovanja, which means Sick Day Afternoons. So there's a publication with some of my poetry in English and in Serbian. So the first one I'm going to read... because right now, as you know, the Olympics are happening in Canada. Hurrah! And it's happening in Vancouver, so there's lots of controversy, so I'm hearing people going, Olympics. Very first day in the opening ceremonies, there was poetry, which doesn't ever happen. So there's a slam poet who did a poem. And so my friend said, it reminded me of your poem you have in Canada, about Canada. So I thought I'd read my poem about Canada. It's for the Olympics, I guess, and for everyone in Canada. You flavor my stories with farm weekends, the nights I played commando with my cousin, shimming under barbed wire, searching for enemies behind silent tractors, silos hiding secret nuclear weapons, or when it was so dark we traced our name with sparklers across the sky, the stars so close they blanketed our heads. You weave your way into tales of Vancouver bus rides, the 3 a.m. number 8 bound for Fraser, where if you asked someone for a knife, they'd have one tucked in their boot. You'd lose your stuff if you left your seat. Questions of, who took my CDs? Never answered. Have a driver who'd rather keep driving than stop for police the time the bullet came to the side window. Your packed cars filled with underage drivers doing donuts in parking lots. Tires skating across the ice in winter, creating clouds of dust in summer fields left fallow. You are riverside birthday celebrations, beers in the back of pickups. Fireworks decorating the night with streamers. You are pat snowballs and carrot noses, tensed by midnight skinny-dipping lakes, campfire crackles turning marshmallows brown, and here you guide my tongue to tell your history over and over until it's my own. So I wasn't going to read this one because I read it far too often, but it's my favorite, and I'm going to anyway. And
yay.
It's by Nice Fire. I want to read it. It's called The Drink. It was absent in my house. Red wine, white, Bailey's, whiskey, six packs. My grandpa was a mean drunk, way before I met him, before he became the man who slipped me fivers for candy, played cards late into the night, sat me on his lap to show me how the world worked, as he dieted on his new habits of coffee and cigarettes and KFC family bucket meals. The ones we expected every time he came around to visit while my mom hovered, making peace by fetching and cleaning and keeping quiet. Before me, my grandpa was best at blame, the strong, silent type that didn't talk about his army demotion, or why my grandma couldn't speak goddamn German in front of his goddamn children, or why he slipped vodka into his morning coffees and continued slipping until the day was done, and at least one of his kids had a bloody nose, and at least one of his kids was in a closet or under the bed so he couldn't find them. So alcohol didn't exist in our family beyond that shadow, a past we're never supposed to talk about, because our breed, we don't talk about things. There's no alcoholics amongst us. We're just another set of normal people. But when you're lying naked in a bed in a hotel room with strangers and your doctor says you're killing yourself, and your friends marvel that you make it through the day after the night before, and your blackouts turn to morning with the truck on the lawn and your keys in your hand, and every pub in a 5-mile radius knows your poison, and your new best mates wearing grooves and bar stools, is that proof enough? My grandpa was a mean drunk. He drank to cope. My friends to cope. My uncles to cope. Me to cope. And forget. And forget, and forget, until we all forgot and drank another, a sweet release down the throat. My grandpa was a mean drunk. He drank to cope. But we don't talk about that anymore. So I'm going to read you a couple new ones. just for you.
Yay!
I'm working on a new collection, and it's basically intersecting storylines of different characters. So this is a couple pieces from a character by the name of John. And this is the first one. It's called The Day She Died. The day she died, we settled in as the wind and horizontal rain batter the windows. We cheer, beers raised, us lads together. I show them the ring, and the barkeep throws in a round. They clap my back and raise pint glasses skyward, and the game on the telly turns to noise. 100 miles away on the edge of the sea, a wave hits the path I should have been on. In the pub, us boys are tucked up inside, ale darker than the coming night, and we drink to my health and Lizzie's. On the path, the water knocks her sideways and clings to her as she falls. Its fingers dig into crevices, pushes deep into eyes, ears, her lungs. It carries her limp body westward to the setting sun while I drink into the night, the ring she'd never wear in my pocket. And here's a couple more. Here's called it's called Intruder. A sliver of light stretched across the bed onto lined paper, an essay half-formed, hours after I told them homework was done. Tried to concentrate on dates, names, figures, instead of the clink of glass and ice, soft murmurs, keep my eyes from their slow sway, his hands resting lightly on her hips, where my father's used to be. And this one is called With Dawn Comes. With dawn comes, twitches in her sleep, and my room brightens despite the dark curtains. I shift, watch her pillow-creased face through half-slits. Her name is missing somewhere between first pint and first kiss. I pretend to sleep, cheap perfume clinging to me like she did last night, her legs a mix of muscle and flab, an office girl who runs twice a week. She bolts upright, snatches up clothes, tries to wipe a cum stain off her red polyester skirt, stuffs her laddered tights in her bag. I'll read one more from this collection here. It's called Never Turn Your Back. When fighting zombies, vampires, and soul-sucking creatures, the blonde ones never listen. Turn around to embrace frat boys, or the professor, or to tie a shoe. Forgetting the simple horror rules apply no matter how beautiful or buxom you are. You are the red uniform Starfleet security, the first to go, last to know, like our first and last day together when you told me her name, said I love you as your final goodbye. And I'm going to do one more thing for you, maybe a little bit lighter, hopefully. I'm going on Tuesday, a week from this Tuesday, to film a documentary across the States. And we're going to take trains, which isn't done in the States. So this is going to be interesting. And I've done many road trips, so this kind of is about a road trip that I'm going to read. So we're shooting a documentary all the way to South by Southwest, which is in Austin, Texas. I'll say really briefly, we're having a fundraiser on Tuesday at the Center of Creative Collaboration, which is brand new. If you'd like to come, ask me or search for Center for Creative Collaboration, and then you'll find it. It's on Tuesday. It's on Acton Street near King's Cross. So basically, I'm from Edmonton, Alberta, in Canada, and where I'm from, cities are very far from each other. And so when you're driving, and you let's say you forget to stop at the gas station on the way to the next town, sometimes you may have to pee in between. And the only way you're going to do that is either wait or stop in a ditch. Now, I'm not a very big fan of this, and neither is this person in my story. It's called Into the Woods. It was 3 p.m. when they drove past. They wouldn't have seen it at all if she hadn't needed to roll down her window for her fifth cigarette. 5 in 1 hour wasn't a personal best, but it was getting close. 1 hour. It was almost that long since they passed the last gas station. If Carrie knew it was the last one, she would have forced Kevin to pull over. She didn't. So she dreamed of peeing instead of, and trying to block thoughts of waterfalls as she tugged quick puffs from her cigarette. That was until she spotted the perfect spot. Carrie had a thing about peeing in public, and peeing outside was definitely public. The fear of it came after a day of hiking through the woods with her Girl Guide troop. Just as she squatted to relieve herself, a unit of Boy Scouts ran at the trail, She didn't know it was redder, her face, the troop leader's, or her bum, after she realized she settled in poison oak for her quick pee. It was the final proof that she wasn't cut out to hike or camp or do anything anywhere without plumbing and central heating. So when she felt that jiggle sloshy need to go to a bathroom, she wouldn't just let him pull into the ditch for a quick one. She needed shelter, and shelter didn't come easy on the prairies. So the buildings were barely a speck on the horizon as they made their way down an overly graveled side road. Kevin's teeth were grinding, which meant he was worried about the paint job. But she was beyond caring. All she could do was will the buildings closer and closer till they no longer were a mirage. Kevin had barely stopped the car when the Carrie bounded out, hell-bent for the most hidden spot as she unbuckled, unzipped her pants. She didn't notice the ground or the buildings or anything beyond the shadows, the leaning farmhouses, and her overfull bladder. Squatting, she let everything go and felt that rush of happy emptiness. Shit. Toilet paper. In her haste, Carrie forgot her purse in the car. She hated dripping dry. It never worked, and then she'd have to sit in slightly damp panties for the rest of the drive. Her eyes darted from the peeling paint to the sloping building. Ouch. Onto the greenness of the wide leaves around her. Good enough for Adam and Eve, good enough for me, she thought, as she pulled at the plants and wiping herself. Straightening, Carrie did up her zipper, button, and belt, and started her meander back to the car. 10 steps in, the burning began, and then the slow itch. Oh, could it really be? Why didn't she remember the telltale leaves, the subtle markings? As her meander turned to a crawl, she pulled herself towards the car. She could see Kevin singing along to the Bangles, Walk Like an Egyptian, which would have made her laugh if the itching hadn't taken over her brain. It almost took a full verse and chorus before he saw her writhing on the ground. White-faced, he ran from the car. No, don't! She screamed. Don't come any closer! It's poison oak! It's poison oak! Shocked still, Kevin looked up and down as the Bangles continued their ode to Egyptian dance. Much to Carrie's annoyance, the freeze lasted barely a second before he fell to the ground in silent laughter. The tears rolled in streams down his cheeks as Carrie kept on with her itch-relieving wiggle. As he slowly regained his breath, Kevin's smile spread his face into a grin. And he finally said what she thought she'd only hear over candlelight, by a moonlit lake, or when eating some sinfully cake concoction. Will you marry me? Her answer was supposed to be elegant and completely memorable, like the one she practiced in the mirror since she was 10. At least she remembered one thing from Girl Guides: be prepared. But here, as the poison oak continued its attack, all she could do was nod yes. Thank you very much. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks very much, Heather. Thanks for listening to the To Our House people. And then later on, the Dark Cellar starts and the gloom. The scene has been set. It's the night is closing in. It's really strange doing poetry in daylight this afternoon. I found it disorientating, so I'm not really sure who I am, where I am, what I am. But I hope you've enjoyed it. And there's more music. Thanks for Book Club Boutique and Selena for having us here today. And we're going to hang around and just have a few drinks. And
so the next section's the booze section.
Booze section.
Kind of give away in the name. DJ Redman. Take it away, Kev!
Take it away, Kev!
Yeah!